Hey everyone, welcome back to the Banana Data Podcast, a podcast hosted by Data IQ, where we discuss the good, the great, and the ugly of AI in our bi-weekly episodes. I'm Chris.
And I'm Corey.
Let's dive in.
Hello everyone, and welcome to the seventh episode of the Banana Data Podcast. I'm your co-host, Corey Strassman, and I'm a community manager at Data IQ. If you're just joining us for the first time, this is actually the fifth season and the seventh episode of the Banana Data Podcast. Where has the time gone, CPM?
My gosh, time is absolutely flying. I remember just last episode, we were talking to our guest, Christina Shao, talking about establishing the role of tech evangelists in humanizing data and why we need them and how they can help us usher in responsible and explainable AI through MLOps. Time is just flying. It seems just like yesterday we were having that chat.
Only yesterday,
yeah.
Even though it'll be recorded forever.
Yes, memorialized. So actually, you know, I heard, Corey, you're in New York, right?
Yes, I am.
I heard that there was a massive heat wave recently.
Well, yeah, it was really hot. I mean, like, it wasn't as bad as it was for our West Coast listeners in the U.S. and Canada. But believe it or not, Central Park hit 90 degrees Fahrenheit, which was the highest since 2013. LaGuardia hit 100 degrees, which was an all-time record. And this was around Wednesday, June 30th at 4:15 p.m. Eastern time. And you want to know why I decided to use that timestamp?
Yeah, tell me.
Well, we're going to tell a story, which aligns with today's theme of the episode.
All right, I'm ready. Crisscross applesauce, tell me.
Here we go, story time. So around the time when we were experiencing really hot weather, something really funny happened. I started receiving all these emergency texts on my phone, and it wasn't for family or friends asking me, how are things going? It was asking us to conserve energy. There was a risk of blackouts in the greater New York area, and it urged 8.4 million residents to conserve energy via push notification. So moments after the city called for conservation and warned of possible outages, the demand for electricity actually disappeared, and it actually decreased significantly. And you want to know why we avoided all these blackouts?
Yeah.
Because of this push notification. You want to know how I know this?
Tell me.
Because there is a really great graphic that was presented by Bloomberg the next day. And this graphic really tells you a compelling visual story. It basically shows the demand dip. The power consumption fell in New York after officials urged conservation. And it shows a really interesting line graph. It shows the NYC demand forecast and the actual demand. And it shows you right at the moment that it set those push notifications. And it shows very clearly the decrease in the demand of energy consumption right at that moment. So around that period where the push notification hit, we're looking at around 10 megawatts of energy consumed, and that fell all the way down to close to 7, and that actually avoided a number of blackouts. Of course, there are a lot of different factors that go into this. You know, I don't necessarily know if there was a causation. It was probably a correlation. It could have just been sort of normal, you know, the temperature's cooling down after the sunset, so energy consumption is going to go down slightly. That's not necessarily telling us a complete story, but it's telling us a really compelling story visually of what happened. And something that I really found interesting because I experienced it.
Yeah. So tell me, Corey, did you do anything to help conserve energy? Like, were you, you know, you were experiencing this firsthand. Like, I imagine that you were a part of this too.
I was a part of this experience. And for those of you who are interested in learning more about kind of what happened, we received a push notification urging us to preserve energy. And it listed specific examples such as reducing air conditioning, not using a washing machine or a microwave or the stove or oven, turning off lights. So we did a number of those tactics to help decrease the demand of energy consumption and thankfully reduce the blackouts, because if there would have been blackouts, then all that great AC that everyone was feeling would not have been functioning and everyone would have been feeling that massive amount of heat.
This visual is very simple. You know, a lot of our listeners are not going to be able to see the picture, but it's very clear on one axis you have the time and on the Y axis you have the energy consumption. And you can clearly see that the moment that text message went out, that curve starts going down. But I think that there are a lot of elements here of great storytelling. you know, not just with the simple example, but, you know, I recently watched a couple of TED Talks by Malavika Sridhar and also Ben Wellington on storytelling. And they make a lot of good points about what are the principles of storytelling, not just data, not just, you know, regular stories told by authors, but data stories as well. And they say that data storying follows the same principles of like an author writing a very thrilling novel like Harry Potter that's been ingested by so many. And I think this example of New York houses all of these principles. There's a clear quest or a clear hypothesis. What was the impact of this text message on energy consumption? What's the objective? Well, I think the article wants to show that there was a downturn in that electricity consumption. There's a clear game plan, what that solution would look like. How do we visualize this? A line graph. What are the tools that we need to help answer our question? What's the raw data? And it's not only a great story, but there's also a connection to the audience. You know, everybody has sort of been in those situations where you're out on a hot day. We've all possibly experienced a blackout, and you know that that's a terrible moment where you don't have electricity. It connects and resonates with people's experiences. Yours, Corey, in particular, being a New York citizen, going through this, you were a part of that story. You contributed to that impact of decreased electricity consumption. And you're like your own subject matter expert. It's also very simple. One input, one output, focusing on a main idea.
Since I have that emotional connection too, and since I was able to clearly understand the value of that visualization, and I saw what the impact was, theoretically, if this happens again, I would probably have more of an emotional connection to act and to understand that if by acting, there will be a positive result and that I will be contributing to a positive outcome.
Yes, absolutely. Being part of that greater good is certainly something that can be persuasive. I think those who consume this type of visual will likely remember it for the next time that something similar happens. You know, there's another example on that front, maybe by using Waze. Are you familiar with Waze, the app for navigation?
Of course I am.
Yeah, I tend to use it all the time. I depend on GPS. I can't even read a map anymore. But like, you know, if you get a notification on your way to your work that there's a cop on the highway, maybe you're a little bit late to work that day and you're speeding a little bit. You know what I would do? I would slow down. I don't want to get a ticket. I don't want to get in trouble. But you know, I only get that notification because somebody contributed that data. They drove on that highway a few minutes before me and they said, hey, you know what? FYI, everybody on this highway, slow down. You don't want to get in trouble. Don't get a ticket. Or maybe there's a pothole in the road that you don't want to fall into. Well, you know, the next time I'm driving down the highway, leisurely, maybe it's a weekend afternoon and I'm just going to play some volleyball in the park. If I see a cop on the side of the highway, even though I'm not speeding, maybe I'll report it for the next person who might be you know, a little bit late to be a little bit safer, slow down. You don't want to get in trouble. And I'm doing that because I've consumed some data. I've seen a notification or I've even maybe seen a visual that told a story that resonated with me. And I'm being part of that greater good, giving back. And then, of course, you know, the cycle continues. It's the power of consumption.
Absolutely. And notifications are great. And you know what are great about notifications? They tell you things that about information that you want to know. So if you subscribe to the Banana Data Podcast, you'll receive these types of notifications that tell you when new episodes are available for you to listen to. So subscribe to the Banana Data Podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
So on that front of consumption, you know, one of the things that is important to recognize is that if you really want to get a point across, you really want more people to consume that point and not only consume it, understand it, because they'll be more likely to spread and share that idea. So persuasion comes alongside consumption. I recently read an article by Tableau, and there's a nice quote in there that says, "Stories take advantage of human cognition. They build connections and context around facts in order to make them more memorable. And data tells you what's happening, but stories tell you why it matters." And that really resonates with me. Data is just facts and evidence, but stories really tell you a full picture and taps into your empathy, why you should care, what's the purpose, why it matters.
Yeah, story arcs make it more engaging and easier to remember. A story is an excellent tool for passing knowledge from one person to another. This is going back to the dawn of time when the Iliad and Odyssey were developed by the ancient Greeks as a story. Mm-hmm. They were passed down as stories. They weren't written in books. They weren't passed along as data sets. They were told from one generation to another using the power of storytelling and the power of music, which helped provide an emotional connection and allow people to have a better memory of it because now we have the Iliad and Odyssey thousands of years later because of that.
Yeah, my God, you know what other memories I have? I have bad memories. My Latin teacher will contest to this, but bad memories of having to translate Homer's text from the original Latin. But hopefully the memories are good.
Tabula rasa, CPM.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Carpe diem.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. But yeah, you know, this is a really good point. Generally speaking, you know, the emotional impact of a story really increases the motivation that people have to act upon the results of that data. That's another quote from this Tableau article.
So CPM, back to this waste example, tell us more about the storytelling elements of it. Who's it helping? How's it helping? Is it really helping anyone?
Yeah, well, I think there's a couple components here. You know, we already mentioned it's feeling part of the greater good. I think in one of our earlier episodes this season, we talked about how that helps humanize data and helps you have a connection to the output, the impact. But there's also this element of being a good data citizen, right? If you are the one who is reporting a pothole on the road or reporting that a police officer is sitting by the sidelines and everybody should drive a lot safer, you're being a good data citizen by helping out, again, the greater good. That emotional impact of a story can exponentially increase the motivation people have to act upon the results of data. That's another quote from this Tableau article. And I think that this resonance, this empathy, is a topic that we're tapping into with this type of storytelling. It's easier to relate to a story if you can better empathize with it. Imagine that you've got a friend who's fallen into a pothole and you're just walking by. If you just sort of look from the top and you say, you know what, that really sucks, I feel bad for you, and you keep going about your way, that's sympathy. But it's just a fact, right? That's just facts and evidence, data. Somebody has fallen into the pothole. But a story provides that purpose and care and more empathy. Empathy in this situation would be climbing in that pothole with them, saying, you know what, I feel your pain. Together, we've got to solve this problem. We got to find a solution. You're more connected there, and it's not just a fact we're in a pothole, but now you have purpose and care, which taps into that empathy and eventually will relate to telling a story how we've gotten out of this predicament.
And CPM, if you ever fell in a pothole, I would surely go down and rescue you and be there and be empathetic with you.
Feeling is mutual, Corey.
Well, we've talked about humanizing data and how compelling visualizations can help get the point across to non-technical crowds. Is that where the buck stops?
You know what? I'm glad you asked this question, because all too often, data scientists, machine learning engineers, data engineers, they can often minimize the value of good exploratory data analysis, or EDA, you know, making graphics and visualizations. But I think that even for those who are really, really super skilled and technical, they can find so much value in visualizations as well.
Yes, CPM, and as we saw last week, and of course, if you subscribe to the Banana Data Podcast, you would know that, last week's episode with Christina Shao, she talked about how once MLOps is fully implemented, it allows data scientists to be able to focus on other important elements. So in this case, it would make sense that if the machine learning aspects are automated and data scientists don't have to worry about building all of those pipelines, that they could focus on the storytelling elements of it and focus more on the data visualization.
Yeah, you know, that's a good point. Often the data scientists are really excited to hop into modeling, optimizing for metric, feature engineering. You know, all of that is really great and they should still do that. But simple graphics with maybe just a couple of variables up front can help expedite and improve their processes down the line. Think about this example. Let's say I am tasked with figuring out what's the best way that students learn in a school. And I've got a hypothesis, very simple, clear hypothesis and a quest. And it's talking about if you study for an exam with a specific textbook, the likelihood that your score is going to be high is much higher. So let's say I just build a very simple graphic with time spent studying on the x-axis and score on the y-axis. In a couple of seconds, I could really get a great indication whether or not my hypothesis is validated and supported by this graphic. and have an actionable conclusion saying, you know, hey, you should study more to get a higher score. But what about the opposite situation? What if it's not supported? Well, that would be a big plot twist, which is another element of great storytelling. And it tells you, you know what? Maybe my original assumption was wrong. What's the reason here? Maybe there's an error in the textbook. Maybe some of the examples in that textbook are confusing, but I've got to do more investigation. And before I even build a model, I've got to dig around more in my data. So if your data does not support your original hypothesis, it likely contains hints at some alternative or possibly an even more interesting phenomena at hand. Worst case scenario, you've got something else to explore.
I have a plot twist for you, CPM.
Oh, wow. What's that?
We're just talking about the examples of like students and data and stuff like that. And like, you know, there are a lot of people who listen to this who are in the field or aspiring to be in the field. So are there like other popular or other examples that you can think of on in terms of visualization focused roles popping up at companies in the space?
Oh, absolutely. There are even specific courses, semester-long courses at colleges focused on statistical graphics and visualization. Even one at my alma mater, it's one of the most popular classes at CMU in the undergrad program. But there's also specific job descriptions and roles that are popping up at companies in the space that are just all about telling stories and visualizing data. Because storytelling is a skill. There's an art to it and a science to it, as we often talk about on the podcast. But it's not, you know, it's not something that's innate in a data scientist's role. I think it's definitely a very valuable skill to have, but not all data scientists really tap into that.
Absolutely. And, you know, just to go along with something that CPM said, you know, it's not like we're advocating that all data scientists need to be storytellers. Some people just don't have the skill set for that. But it's undeniable that there's a lot of resources that are available that are particularly picking up on this because of a lot of the principles that we've talked about in this episode. You cited the article from Tableau before. Tableau is a really premier resource in terms of transforming the visualization experience. If you're looking at an example that's DataIQ, there's, you know, Egg on Air, which is looking at different data stories and looking at different data experiences at the enterprise level and having them tell their stories from soup to nuts so that you can understand like what the use case is, what the value is, what the outcomes are. And if you go back to those examples that we cited before in terms of the principles for storytelling, a lot of the content focus there really focuses on those principles to begin with.
You know, one of my favorite episodes of Egg on Air, besides my own on statistical paradoxes, was by Taryn Southern. It was all about how to leverage storytelling to humanize technology. And Taryn's a really fantastic AI consultant. She's an award-winning artist and storyteller whose work explores the intersection of emerging technology and storytelling in general. And to me, that just underscores the fact that storytelling with data is a really specialized and specific skill. Not everybody has it, but if you do and you have that in your toolbox, it really separates good data scientists from great data scientists.
And speaking of going from being a good data scientist to being a great data scientist, you're definitely going to want to join us for our next episode because we're going to be talking about strategies for data humanization. Strategies at the team level, at the enterprise level, just ways to be able to better weave in humanization into your data science practice. So if you guys heard us talk about EDA, for example, today, and you have no idea what that acronym means, I would Google it first. But I would also join us for our next episode because we're going to be talking about different strategies, different tools, different techniques for you to become a better data humanist in your data science practice. So thank you, CPM.
Thank you so much, Corey. I can't wait for next week. I'm going to pick up some tips myself.
Yes. Bye, everyone. See you next time.
Bye, team.
That's all we've got today in the world of banana data. We'll be back with another podcast in 2 weeks. In the meantime, the Banana Data Podcast is on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and more. Subscribe to us wherever you listen to podcasts. See you next time.